plate to potential nugget.
And moving forward, you know, clearly you had a really pedigreed background, right? Harvard, Morgan Stanley, UBS, some of the marquee names on your CV. Talk to us about how did Dasra happen at that inflection point, given the opportunity cost with an HBS MBA and some of these banks where you'd worked?
So, you know, for me, the biggest aspiration was to get a job. I know that sounds really kind of silly and basic. And then coming out of college, I came out in like one of the hottest years in Wall Street. So it really had nothing to do with me per se, but it had that they were like looking for young people into analyst programs at that time. And I had studied math. So I was like, oh, okay, let me sort of try Wall Street out. And I think that's, for me, became an eye-opener where I went to New York. I was in, you know, mergers and acquisitions. And I think that started down this path of what one imagines one could never be a part of. But then all of a sudden you're there and you're like, really, this isn't that big of a deal. So I think once you achieve what you imagine, sometimes it loses its charm, for lack of a better word. And so I was down this path, but I was still, you know, on that path, or what people usually do. So you go to Morgan Stanley, then after Morgan Stanley, you go to private equity funds or you go to business school. I was like, well, I'll go to a private equity fund. And if I don't get into business school, I don't really want to go to business school. So I was like, but if I do want to go to business school, then I'll really only want to go to Harvard and I'll probably never get in anyway. So I only applied to HBS. And then I got in and I was like, oh, geez, I got in. I better go. Kind of felt like maybe they made a mistake. So I better not, no one should catch on, and then I'll just kind of go. But I think there were a few years at Morgan Stanley, which is actually where I met Deval, my husband. And we both sort of run, not sort of, we both run Dasra together. He was an analyst at Morgan Stanley in the leveraged buyout group, and I was an analyst in M&A. And I think when you're young and you're working 100, sometimes 120 hours a week, you have these sort of contemplative moments about why is it that we're making these PowerPoints and Excel spreadsheets, and really, are we having an impact by these kinds of things you read in the big deals you read in the newspaper? And I think that's really where we seeded some of our dreams about what Dasra might end up being. But frankly, I actually never had the courage. And Deval has a tremendous sense of idealism and altruistic. And so I was like, you go and do this Dasra thing. I've gotten into business school, so I'm going to business school. And I think for me, after getting to HBS, it was a combination of realizing that, wait a second, am I really making a difference? And the school kind of brainwashes you. You know, their whole thing is leaders that make a difference in the world. And so after having Morgan Stanley, after having sort of Harvard Business School, I think you realize, or at least I realized, I came from privilege, not from wealth, but privilege of whether it's education or exposure, that all of a sudden you start to wonder, like, can you use that to actually make a difference? By then, Deval had already started Dasra, and I was like, wow, that looks like fun. I still didn't have the courage, so I went back to UBS, because I also had loans from school. And then about a year into UBS, I was like, oh, okay, I think I'm ready. What do I have to lose, kind of?
And the other question I had was about sort of the ROI on the MBA, the sort of paying off the debt and stuff. So I guess you sort of joined UBS, paid it off, and then I guess...
So I joined UBS. I didn't pay it all off because I had big loans. I also went to school and thoroughly enjoyed school. So it wasn't like I lived on a really small budget or anything like I should have in retrospect, but I was part of the school's loan forgiveness program when you move into doing social enterprise work. So I was the longest, I think I still am the longest standing in the history of school to have made as little as I have or had. For 12 years, I was on that program. It's like a mortgage, so you keep kind of paying and the school kind of helps you through. I remember getting permission from Dean Noria to extend the 10 years to the 12 years. So yeah, I was on the loan forgiveness program. I didn't actually think about my HBS degree as like an asset that I could market. I just took it as a development opportunity, a learning opportunity, And now I realize years later how it does help, and it can be leveraged from both the institution and what it represents, and that what I'm most excited about now is being able to extend everything the school is potentially about and the learning to the social sector. And so over the years, I've started to feel very proud of the fact that you can have this kind of background, but you can kind of move out, for lack of a better word, and bridge to the social sector. And I think more and more people are starting to walk that bridge. And I think that bridge is not as shaky as it used to be, even in my time and in the years that, you know, I made the transition.
Mm-hmm. And what's changed? Maybe just picking up on the bridge not being as shaky as it was in the past.
I think as a society, people think it's cooler. So, you know, you're not a loser if you're in the social sector. So some of the social image and social pressures, I think, have definitely moved. I think the millennial generation, for sure, just realizing that they want to make a difference and that's important to them. I think some of that shift has been important. So, and I think that whether it's the private sector or the public sector, I think recognizes a need for leadership and talent to move into this sector of civil society, because of the extent of the problems that we have are not going to go away if we don't really sort of tackle it.
Got it.
In my experience of how people in my peer group have made choices, whether it was at IIM Ahmedabad or at McKinsey, I've generally found that people start by leveraging the skills and then going after what's commercially attractive given the skills. Then they hit about 35 and start asking the passion question. What do I enjoy doing? What gives me energy? What gives me joy? Then they move along for a while, and then they start feeling existential angst and start asking the question around purpose and pivot in their 40s sometimes. I know this is a pretty broad brush, but the point I'm making is that people often approach these transitions in a sequential manner as they move up the Maslow's hierarchy and as they transition through various stages in life. I guess there's really an opportunity to short-circuit that process and really be thoughtful about marrying passion, skills and purpose, and overlaying that with opportunity earlier than later, and without a significant trade-off on the commercials, given that there's often a business case in a lot of these situations. Thank you for listening. If you want to listen offline, say during a car ride home or during airplane travel, you could also access the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Savan and several other podcast apps. In fact, Google has recently launched an app for podcast listening on Android platforms too. If you went to playtopotential.com, you would also have the opportunity to listen to multiple voices curated by a topic. You just have to click on the curated playlist section. If you find the content purposeful, please go to iTunes, rate and review the show. It will help others discover it. Thank you for listening.